You are listening to the Tour des Flâneurs, the cycling podcast at the 2021 Tour de France, powered by Super Sapiens. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Stage 17, today we're in Salary-Soulan.
Well, we opened there with the noise from the summit at the finish of the day, the top of the Col du Portet. Mitch, you were up there.
I could not go up there. We had the press centre halfway up the climb, the last climb, and there was no mix zone at the top today. So as journalists, it's not necessarily that beneficial to go to the top anymore because the whole area is blocked off. But I thought, I'm going to catch the ski lift up. It's not every day I get to go and see the finish of one of these epic mountain stages, let alone the Tour de France. I'm going to take the opportunity, and it was well worth it. I sort of clawed my way through the crowd. I found a spot at about 150 metres to go. And what blew me away was the raw emotion in the faces of these guys. And I'm talking about the first three there, Carapaz, Vingegaard, and
The other guy. Like, that guy, yeah.
I could feel it. And I could see that effort in their eyes. And they were so close to me. And it was a bit of a first-time thing for me. And I really understood at that moment why people go up hours before, days before, for that split-second moment. It was actually all worth it, even though I got there half an hour before. But it was so amazing. It was cold up there. There was a wind blowing. And just to absorb that atmosphere of the Queen stage of the Tour de France, in that moment there, I really got a whole 2.5 weeks of the tour. It was awesome.
It's amazing that you... It's like being with Kate again, isn't it, Francois? But it's amazing that it leaves that impression on you and that you're able to experience those emotions because, you know, this is your world. You know these people. You ride with them. You race with them. So for you to be able to kind of watch it in that detached way as a spectator for the day, never mind journalist, because you were before the finish, you were actually there watching the race. It makes you probably quite unusual, I suspect.
I think as a rider, you appreciate the effort they're putting in. You know where they're at. Not that I've ever been at the top of a mountain sprinting for the victory, but I just knew what it took for those guys to be there. The 2.5 weeks before, the stage, the two mountains before, the whole way up that mountain, attacking each other on the limit and knowing that at a K to go, oh, it's 1K to go, I've got to do it, I've got to save my GC or whatever it is. And then 100 metres to go, 100 metres in everyone's mind, it's a split second, but in that moment, it just ticks by. And that's where I was at that moment. I could just see those guys going, oh, it's just the last push. This is the last push. And I could feel it. So it was really cool to see that because you can relate to it so much as a rider. It was really, like I said, it was a really nice moment.
Great.
You probably also related to, I mean, there was a nice image today, on TV we saw them pass by, but when Anthony Perez, the last guy out, you know, from the break, we started to see him crumble gradually, the little gestures he made, like asking for a bidon, and then his face like contorted and sweaty, and you knew he was in a bad way, you know. You could feel everything was falling apart, and he knew it was the end. But on the one end, you got the winners, you know, the guys battling out for the stage victory, and on the other end, you've got the guy who's done his best, but who knows, you know, it's you know, the doom is coming, you know, it's crawling and creeping on him, and that's what makes those great mountain stages so exciting, I guess.
It did seem to be a stage that a certain rider in the yellow jersey wanted. Possibly the best displayed by his team, UAE Team Emirates, today. But Tadej Pogacar clearly wanted that stage, didn't he, to sort of cement his status as the champion in waiting of this Tour de France. But we did see a really interesting battle, three-way battle. Your man, Rigoberto Urán, lost a bit of ground today. I would say he's still got a shot at the podium, given the time trial on Saturday, but we're going to hear from him in this episode. You spoke to him at the start this morning, Mitch, which is great to hear him speaking in English and It's a short but fantastic interview, actually, with Iran. So we'll hear that a bit later on. We've got lots of interviews. I mean, you're fighting them off, Mitch. I mean, they're forming a queue. There was a queue to speak to you at one point this morning. You were speaking to Simon Geschke. That's a very funny interview as well. He tells us about his humiliation yesterday when Wout van Aert came steaming past him. And Carlos Verona came along and he was queuing patiently, waiting.
In the rain.
Mm-hmm. It's in the rain.
I felt so bad for him.
But he but was not, very not good. So bad that you didn't keep him waiting a bit longer. Let's have the tale of the etap. We began this morning in Muret and we finished at Saint-Lary-Soulan at the top of the Col du Portet. It was, and I didn't really fully appreciate this until Luke Durbridge pointed out, but it was a stage that we did a couple of years ago that Nairo Quintana won, which started in Luchon, didn't it? Just on the outskirts of Luchon. They had that grid start in 2018, I think it was. So it was a stage that a lot of riders would be familiar with. It was also 14 juillet, the 14th of July, so Bastille Day, as we call it. The French don't call it Bastille Day. Pierre Roland, well, we saw a lot of French attacking today. Okay, so I've hidden the crisps here because crisps are banned during the podcast. And they obviously didn't realize I've hidden them. And they brought another bowl of crisps. Absolutely outrageous. Anyway, yeah, Pierre Roland was had a go, didn't he? But it was a big old effort he made for not an awful lot of gain. The break did form with Lucas Postelberger, Bora Hansgrohe, Danny Van Poppel, Intermarché, Dorian Godon of AG Desert, Anthony Perez of Cofidis, still searching for that stage win. Anthony Turgis of Total Energy and Maxime Chevalier of B&B KTM bridged across to make a much bigger group. Julien Bernard, poor old Julien Bernard. That was painful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He was trying to get across and it just wasn't happening for him. And he eventually, that group was never allowed to gain too much time. 8 minutes was the maximum advantage they had. Van Poppel won the intermediate sprint. And in the peloton, Michael Matthews scored a few more points ahead of Mark Cavendish in the green jersey competition. We had those big three climbs right at the end of the stage. It was really back-loaded. And we saw a really concerted push by Arkea Samsic. We had a diary entry from Conor Swift this morning saying that they were really up for it. Quintana, who did win the stage a few years ago, was really up for winning King of the Mountains points and trying to win the stage. We saw a lot of Conor Swift working with UAE Team Emirates to bring that break back. And then Elie Gesbert went off at the front on the foothills of the climb with Quintana. Big effort they made, which maybe didn't quite pay dividends because Wout Poels was with them. And Poels had a pretty good day in the King of the Mountains jersey to consolidate his lead. And his closest rival now, is, in fact, is Tadej Pogacar. But we'll get to him in a moment. Perez was the last survivor from that group. And, you know, on another day, he might have fancied that he had a bit of a chance. He had a decent lead, but there was a long way up to the finish. And as I said earlier, it looked like Pogacar had this stage in his sights. There wasn't to be a Bastille Day victory for a Frenchman, unfortunately. Halfway up the climb to the finish, Perez was caught. I mean, they barely had a chance to glance at him. Pogacar by then was really kind of turning the screw. We were about 8 kilometres up the climb, Francois, and it was roughly about that point that Pogacar really turned it on. Rafał Majka had swung off by that point. He was on his own and he really took it to the others. But Jonas Vingegaard was very impressive. Didn't ever really look in too much trouble. Richard Carapaz went with those two as well. Carapaz did look in trouble. His face was in contortions. He was grimacing a lot of the way up. And we'll maybe talk about that a bit later on. David Godu, a valiant attempt for the French behind, but he didn't make much of an impression. He was chasing all the way to the line. It was a great sort of battle between the three of them up front. Mainly Pogacar forcing it, Vingegaard following, and then in the end, Carapaz attacking. Vingegaard was distanced initially. He came back, had a go, but Pogacar always kind of looked the most comfortable, and he was the winner of the stage.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2021 Tour de France, powered by Super Sapiens. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Still guessing on fueling? Not sure what or when to eat and drink on rides that matter? Never again. Optimize your fueling strategy with real-time glucose data, actionable insight, and personalized analytics. We are here to help you achieve your performance goals. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success.
My name is Kevin Sprouse. I'm a sports medicine physician, head of medicine for EF Nippo Pro Cycling. One of my other positions is I'm a scientific advisor for Super Sapiens. I started using continuous glucose monitors like this with my patients 5 or 6 years ago across numerous sports. And what I saw is that having this novel insight into metabolism was something that allowed us to stop guessing in so many areas of health and training. And in my experience with it, I saw that it would be a massive benefit to professional athletes, recreational athletes, those that are just looking to optimize their health and performance. And so when Super Sapiens came around and took that technology that was previously very focused toward diabetics and, you know, patients who had a certain diagnosis, and they take it and they put it in the realm of those that don't have this diagnosis, who just want to use the same data for health and performance, that really resonated with me. It was something that I was doing anyway, but kind of using a technology that hadn't quite been tailored to this purpose. And now Super Sapiens has come along and really made it pertinent, easy to understand, and very usable for the athlete.
Thank you very much indeed to our title sponsor, Super Sapiens. We're very grateful indeed to them, and we heard a little bit there from, well, somebody that Mitch knows very well, Dr. Kevin Sprouse, your team doctor, who's a great advocate of Super Sapiens, telling us a bit about how Super Sapiens work. Don't forget, you can still enter our competition to win 3 months worth of Super Sapiens sensors. Go to thecyclingpodcast.com and you'll find out how to send in your 60 second or less clip telling us how and why you would use Super Sapiens. And thanks once again indeed to them. Mitch, what are we drinking?
We found a little beauty once again tonight. I tell you what, I thought this was going to be harder than it's turned out to be, but the road on the craft beer scene has been very, very good to us. We're drinking a beautiful beer tonight. It's very similar fashion to last night in terms of there was only three styles offered from this brewery. They offered an amber, a white ale, and a blonde. And we all chose the same again. I'm on the amber.
Actually, you got the amber, did you?
I had an IPA last night, so it was slightly different. I'm on the amber, you're on the blonde.
And I'm on the white.
White. It's a little brewery, not too far from here, in a town called Aru.
Aru. It's very famous. Well, I mean, the tour comes here almost every year, you know. It's in the valley at the foot of the big climb, so yeah. It's a classic village that the tour crosses, Aru.
And we've got the Tour of Malay right here. We're at the bottom of the Aspin, also another tough little climb. We really feel like we're on a little mountain holiday here in this little place we are. And this brewery, from what we've been able to understand, is it's from a town where it's called Alaucates. And what that means is that is the name given to the person who takes care of geese, who breeds them, who feeds them, who brings them up. And this town was famous for farming geese, I guess you could say, for fraguar, I guess.
Yes, so,
and
yeah.
There's a picture of a little goose on the front. Looks quite happy. Don't know about the reality of that, but let's just pretend that that's how they are.
Yeah, it was happy before, and we won't elaborate on the end, you know.
But what I love about this, it's a really organic beer, no filter, non-pasteurized, and you can see it. It's really quite cloudy, but it's a beautiful beer, actually. Not one you want to drink all day, but it's certainly beautiful tonight. A nice little cleansing ale while we're recording this podcast.
It's very refreshing indeed, Mitch, and mine's almost finished, in fact, so might be looking for a refresher. The Tour de France, then, today, is the race decided? Francois, I mean, the race is decided in the sense that Pogacar confirmed...
Yeah, the only suspense left and our excitement was about the podium. And I was among the first to say so that, you know, we thought Rigo had a fair chance to be second because of his time trial skills. And I didn't believe he would be, you know, dropped the way he was today. I thought he would, you know, keep in contention maybe with the other two. But today, yeah, the last, 7Ks of today's stage were actually... The march towards the podium, I think, in many ways, And to see the three guys, you know, coming up the mountain, there was a little bit of mist, you know, one after the other, led by Pogacar because he led most of the way. And even the stage result today might well be the Tour de France result in the end. So, you know, sometimes we call these stages the test, you know, the queen stage or whatever you want. But really, it was like, I know that the marching towards Paris is the last day with the champagne and every day and everything. But today, you know, those last 7Ks really looked like, you know, the march to Paris. And yeah, well, everybody tried, you know, to play with strength. Carapaz, as you said, so, I mean, well, that's a discussion we can have. He looked in a bad way, but what was it, you know, made up? What was he planning to attack, you know, from at the least expected moment? And maybe that was the only way to try and Pogacar off his guard. But he only succeeded in you could tell that, you know, he kind of spurred Pogacar into reaction, like he's, you know, like the yellow jersey. What? How do you dare, you know, do this to me? And he took control back again. As you said, Vingegaard was dropped, but he came back bravely, and you know, and you started to think, well, maybe you know what's going to happen in the sprint. You still had that maybe little, you know, remembering the day when Vingegaard attacked Pogacar and took a little bit of time. You thought, well, maybe the sprint is undecided, but no, you know, they came in the first. Pogacar who increased his lead overall, actually slimly by 20 seconds, but second, Vingegaard, who is also a good time trialist. Remember, you know, in La Vallée, he did very well. And then third, Carapaz. It might well be the podium in Paris, with a little question mark over Rigo. It all depends on what Rigoberto runs to tomorrow.
A minute and a half behind Carapaz. I mean, Iran didn't do a great first time trial in this race. I thought he did look in a bit of trouble today, even before he was distanced. We'll get on to Iran again in a moment, maybe, and we'll hear his interview. But, I mean, there was a lot of criticism I saw of Carapaz for the way that he rode. I'm not convinced that he was sandbagging or faking it, as I heard some people claim. I think he was probably on the limit, but he is a sort of rider who is, you know, he's a dynamic, kind of fast rider who would have been able to produce something, which he did in the end, to try and win the stage. I wasn't sure that it was part of some big sort of that he was bluffing it. It was part of a point, because also on a climb like that, there's not an awful lot to gain from sharing from hitting the front.
I was just about to say, why did he have to pull on the front? You know, in my opinion, Pogacar didn't have to ride that hard. He was trying to prove a point, and he was just riding as hard as he could, and the guys were happy to sit in his wheel. They had no need to go up the front and swap turns with him.
Pog was flicking the elbow a bit, wasn't he?
There was a time when Pog really went down to Carapaz and you kind of asked him, why don't you join forces? But as you said, join forces for what?
Yeah.
To lead you to win the tour, you know?
Yeah. It's a race, you know, and I think whether he was faking it or not, he can play his tactic there. And, you know, I think Pogacar, at the end of the day, he could have just sat on and just waited to go. He had 5 minutes lead. He didn't have to prove anything. He could have won the stage in many ways today.
Yeah, and I think he was always going to win it. I mean, Vingegaard's been really impressive, really resolute, hasn't he? And I spoke to the team sports director at the finish, Marijn Zeeman, who Mitch, you know well from your Skill Shimano days many years ago. He used to be at that team. He's sort of been a coach at Jumbo-Visma as well, and now he's a sports director. And I asked him about Vingegaard and his emergence here as a real Grand Tour contender. I also asked him about some comments made recently by Inigo San Milan, who is Pogacar's coach. He said that Pogacar is riding at the same level as last year, but that the others are not, that the others are not performing as well as they have done, even in races earlier this season. So I put that to Zeeman as well. Here's what he said.
Marijn, first of all, Steven obviously didn't finish today. Can you tell us what was up with him? He's ill, is he?
Yeah, he was sick from the rest day, got sick on the rest day, and really fighting his way through yesterday. Hoped to get better after the night, but didn't happen. And then, yeah, he was on the limit straight from the beginning and feeling really bad headache, and he had to stop. Yeah.
And Jonas, I mean, just proved again today that he belongs in that company, and he looks very secure in second place now. Have you been surprised by his level of performance?
that he would be good, that we had really, really a lot of confidence. I mean, he's now for 3 years in the team, and we see how he developed, and we see his data. And but yeah, that he is this good and really improved on this, that is really, really impressive. And that there's always with talents, there is always a moment that they break through, and that is what happened now.
And what sort of level is that? Because Pogacar's coach has said that the opposition isn't as high as last year. I mean, is that from reading the data? Yeah. Is that your impression as well?
But that is really not true. I mean, that those comments I don't understand, and I'm also not going to make those comments. I mean, I think today Pogacar really was always also fighting and really happy to win the stage, and there were also two guys with him. So that I don't understand, and I also don't think that those comments should be made, because I think in the end we're all in the same business, we're all professionals, and one time the opponent is doing a little bit better than the other way, but I'm not going to make those comments about other teams, for sure not.
Vingegaard though, he as I say looks really secure. I mean, you've been very keen, it seems to me, to not put too much pressure on him in this race.
Yeah, but that's exactly, of course, how we work and what we do. And we try to focus on what you can influence, and that is actually paying focus on your nutrition, being very well prepared on what's coming, and a good team spirit within the team, and where everyone is fighting for each other. And I'm very proud of that. Because this is also a big team job with all the people around, with the team staff, and now we have with Jonas another key rider who is also working very well in this program. But also, I think it's between the ears, it's the mindset, and we knew that we were good and that we were very well prepared, and then, high performance sports is also getting used to disappointments and turn it around, and that's the job of the staff. It's like how mechanics, soigneurs, if they are still optimistic and giving everything, the coaches, the riders around. And even though Primoz was home, we still had a lot of quality in the group. And we were very optimistic about that. We kept on going and looking for new goals and motivate each other in that. And then in the end, also like when you have a guy like Jonas, I mean, that puts the team also on a higher level, of course.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, to remind me to tell you that this episode is sponsored by MAP, the cycling clothing company, and we are going to cross over to France, where I think Richard is as excited as a child on Christmas morning.
Got a package waiting for me at a hotel, midway through the Tour de France. How tremendously exciting. I know what it is. It's some items of clothing from MAP, and it's actually a consignment for me and for Lionel, but unfortunately Lionel's not here, and we're the same size, which is handy. Some nice socks. This is very nice jersey. Wow, very stylish indeed. And a bright red shorts here, some lovely new bib shorts. Oh. And the pièce de résistance. The bibs. The navy blue. Wonderful. Oh, cannot wait to try this on.
Richard, I would like to point out that one set of that MAP kit is intended to be for me, so I want you to ensure it makes its way back to the UK. It's not all for you.
Yeah, it needs to be road tested first, Lionel. We were sent two designs of kit, and I was told by Kate that the colour I was trying to describe is actually taupe. And the other is more an orangey red. Both very, very nice. I tried one set of kit on my ride in Andorra, and it's like a second skin. It's incredibly comfortable. Shorts are exceptional. So, well, we're delighted to have MAP on board as a sponsor of the Cycling Podcast.
Indeed, a relatively new company. MAP was founded in Melbourne in 2014 by two cycling obsessives, Ollie and Jared, who have brought their experience from other industries, fashion, technical apparel design and graphic design, and they've injected all of that into their love of cycling and cycling kit. And there's a kind of hint of Melbourne in the kit, isn't there? It's everything is about the sport, the style, the coffee and cafe culture. But I saw on your photograph that you posted on Instagram, Richard, that the kit it absolutely fits like a glove. I like the long sleeves. You know, you're looking very trim at the moment. I know you've been doing a lot of riding. Clearly, just from the aesthetics of it, it looks like some really, really nice kit.
Very simple but appealing designs. It feels very, very fast. I can see why these riders go so fast. I mean, the kit feels so incredibly fast. I actually first encountered MAP kit. I'd seen their stuff on social media, but I first saw it in the flesh, as it were, at the launch of the Trinity Racing team a couple of years ago, Tom Pidcock and co. And I thought then it was stunning in terms of the design, really lovely kit. And we began a little correspondence with MAP then. And as I said earlier, we're delighted to have them on board. I'm looking forward to road testing the rest of the kit later this week, perhaps on a ride with Mitch Docker, who knows?
Well, that combination of good fitting kit, good looking kit, does give you an extra spring in your pedal rev, doesn't it? I mean, if you look good and feel good, everything about cycling is just that little bit more pleasurable, isn't it? Well, if you'd like to get your hands on some MAP kit, you can do so by going to map.cc/cycling. And MAP is spelled MAAP.cc/cycling, and use the code cycling15, that's cycling15, before the end of July, and you can get 15% off all full priced items.
Well, before the break we heard from Marijn Zeeman. He was a little bit annoyed, I think, by the comments made by Iñigo San Millán. And San Millán has actually sent a very gracious tweet tonight, maybe correcting that. It was an interview that he gave to Velo News, where he said that, you know, while Pogacar's level is what they expected, the others' levels were not. Now, you know, at the start of this tour, nobody would have said that his main opposition would come from Jonas Vingegaard. And that tells us something about what's happened in this race, what's happened to some of the favourites who have crashed out or have crashed and are not at the kind of form they should be in. It has been a strange race from that point of view, but Zeeman was adamant that, you know, Vingegaard is performing as you would expect somebody who's second overall in the Tour de France to be performing.
There's always, like in these situations, what we see, I think the Giro last year was a really good case of this. You see people rise to the occasion who may not necessarily get that opportunity. And given their chance, you know, they're able to step up. And maybe Vingegaard riding behind Roglic, he mightn't have got that opportunity for two or three more years, but suddenly now he's flourished and into this new rider, and we'll see what happens from here. You know, there's always good situations to come out of a bad situation. I think this is one of those.
I guess the question I have for you just before we hear from Iran is, do you think he slipped two places tonight. He's a minute and a half behind Carapaz. Has he still got a chance at the podium? Much might depend on tomorrow.
I'm wondering whether he really had his best day today. The fact that, you know, Sergio Aguita was there pacing him, and I saw them go across the line. When they passed me, Sergio had actually dropped Rigo. And it makes me think that maybe he wasn't on his best day today. I really did expect him to be able to follow those top three. And on his very best day, maybe put his own attack in. That's what I was hoping for today, wishing for, to see Rigo sort of show his true. And I'm wondering whether, and this is only speculation, I haven't spoken to him, he mightn't have been on his best day. And I'm hoping that tomorrow he has some legs to do something, and especially just pulls out an amazing time trial. I think it's not out of reach.
Again, I think maybe one of the factors we kind of overlook, but it's been the one of the, weather-wise, the worst tour I've covered in my 32 tours, I think. So it's been wet, it's been cold, it's been, you know, you had a little bit of a rain, there was a little bit of rain today, it was misty, it, you know, I guess it kind of gets into your gear, and, you know, and I'm, well, obviously, I guess, you know, Rigoberto Urán probably doesn't like that kind of weather too much, whether we know that Pogacar does. And obviously, Jonas Vingegaard is probably better used to that type of weather. Would have a hot, you know, and almost normal for July Tour de France affected the results in the end? Well, that's a question. I don't have the answer.
It's a good question, yeah. I mean, it has been a very unusual race. I mean, let's hear from Iran in a moment, but it is worth... I remember last year's Tour de France, speaking to Matt Raben, a chiropractor on your team, and him saying that the story of the Tour last year was Urán's return to the top level. You know, he had a terrible crash in the Vuelta a couple of years ago, which I think you were involved in the crash as well, Mitch, weren't you?
I wasn't. Luckily enough, I got dropped just before that, and I came back to the peloton and was sitting last wheel, so I completely missed that crash. Our whole team was sitting together, and we lost three guys that day.
Well, it was a terrible crash, and he was in hospital in Barcelona for a while, wasn't he, in a very bad way, and a lot of people questioned whether he would come back in any kind of shape. He's 34 now. He seems to be around forever, Uran. And, you know, he's not a guy we've had on the podcast very much because in the past he hasn't really spoken English, and we, you know, it's nice to hear people speak. So you went and spoke to Uran this morning. Here he was.
Good to see you, mate. How are you?
How are you, my friend? All is good, no?
Rigoberto Uran, sitting right up there on GC. Today is a big day. How are you feeling coming today, mate?
Today is the nice day. Okay, nice because it's hard, but the weather also is hard. But the moment for me, I have good condition. Also, my team is very strong and looking for a ride more in the front today, because today is the big day, day for GC rider.
Have you been enjoying the different sort of Rigo again? Well, not the different, the old Rigo. I feel like you're back to your old self again after a few big injuries. You know, we were together in the Vuelta a couple of years ago when the big crash. Have you found your legs again after those few years?
Yes, I working very hard the last 2 years, every day working therapy, my shoulder. But now I'm so happy because my condition is very well, and enjoy every day in this Tour de France, enjoy every day in my life.
Awesome, mate. And what is the plan today for you? Can you tell us, are you going to go for a big attack? Can I see Rigo dancing up there on the final climb or the climb before?
Oh, today is the climb is super hard because it's high altitude, 2,000 meters. Also, the weather is made harder racing. And I wait, we see. Also, my team is looking for one stage with Sergio or Ruben. We will see.
See you, Rigo.
Science in Sport is supporting the cycling podcast at the 2021 Tour de France. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. Don't forget, you can get 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. SISCP25. If you want to enter our competition with Science and Sport to win £80 worth of Science and Sport goodies, go to thecyclingpodcast.com and predict the winner of Sunday's stage into Paris. I'll be stocking up on my Science Sport products tomorrow because I think... Are we going to go for a bike ride tomorrow, Mitch?
We're going to hit Aspen, yeah? Let's hit it.
Oh, God. Going to hit Aspen. Aspen's going to hit back, I suspect. Well, that'll be fun, won't it? There's only one of us tonight who's ordered chips with our meal, and it's the athlete. It's reassuring. Anyway, it was... I did enjoy your interview with Uran. You know, lovely to hear him speak and to hear what he said. You know, it kind of just confirms the impression, I think, that we all have of him.
Mm, yeah, that's exactly right. And he was very relaxed talking today, and that's him. And I was very surprised when you said, you know, it's you're really happy to interview him. And this, I guess, you made it seem like it was quite difficult to talk to him, whether that was the English or whether he doesn't have time for it. But he's just such an easy guy to talk to. Great teammate.
The issue actually with the Colombians is, I mean, some of them speak very good English, like Chavez, for example, but they are so in demand by the Colombian media, who are always at every race in big numbers, that an awful lot of their time at the starts, finishes, taken up speaking to their local media. So you don't often get an opportunity, but it's not that difficult.
No, I suppose also Rigoberto probably, you know, improved, you know, his English well with the F, you know, very much so, because I kind of, you know, was in charge of a couple of press conferences he gave at some races, and he was very reluctant to speak English because he was, you know, he had the impression he would not be able to express, you know, his mind the way he should have. But obviously, it's now really fluent in English. Is very good.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we crack on, a few little bits and pieces I want to remind you of. There are a few cases of our Tour de France wine left, put together by Divine Cellars. The collection was discussed in an episode we released on the eve of the tour, Daniel Freeman, conversation with Greg Andrews of Divine Cellars. If you're interested in purchasing a case, and there are a few left, go to divinecellars.com. That's D-V-I-N-E sellers.com. A reminder that Stacey Snyder's mugs, cappuccino sets and gelato bowls will go on sale. That's the second batch. First batch sold out in 3 minutes. The second batch go on sale on Friday, July the 16th, during Stage 19 at 10 a.m. US East Coast time. All proceeds go to brain tumour research. And the first batch did very well indeed, so we expect the second batch to do equally well. Go to Stacey Snyder's Etsy site to purchase them at that time on Friday. She's also producing, as she always does, a Peddler de Charme mug. It's a beautiful design, and that will go to one rider who you vote as your Peddler de Charme. Not sure how we'll decide on that, but send us your nominations by email, on Twitter, or on Facebook, or on Instagram. Send us your nominations. Tell us why a certain rider should be your Peddler de Charme. Anyone come to mind for you, Mitch? Any Peddlers de Charme? Any?
What's a Peddler de Charme?
Oh, Mitch, just somebody who embodies the a certain charm, elegance, grace, style. It can be for aesthetics. It can be for a lovely gesture. It can be for anything that, you know, means that a rider kind of stands apart.
I think at the moment, Van Aert. Just his sheer presence in the race, in whatever aspect, sprint, climb, mid-race attacking, KOM. Like, there's the physical side of it, but he looks great on the bike. And
well, speaking of Wout van Aert, should we hear from Simon Geschke?
Nice segue. Yeah,
yeah, you spoke to him this morning. I enjoyed this. Let's hear from Simon Geschke of Cofidis.
Talking with Simon Geschke here, good friend of mine, ex-teammate, mate. First of all, how has the tour been up until now? We're in the last week, the final push today. How have you been feeling?
Yeah, I've felt pretty good, especially the end of the second and now starting with the third week. Yeah, legs are there. Yeah, I try to support our leader, Guillaume Martin, as long as I can. And also tried a couple of times to be in the breakaway to get a result maybe, but it's the biggest race in the world, so it's definitely not easy. We saw it yesterday and the days before. Getting in the breakaway isn't getting easier towards the end of the tour.
Mate, you got to tell me about yesterday, because this was an amazing thing. You launched the attack with Guillaume on your wheel. Not an attack, but just a real push forward. Next thing you know, Van Aert comes past you like you weren't even doing anything and looks back like, how come you didn't take my wheel? What was that like?
Yeah, it was a bit humiliating actually, because you said I was just pushing. I did actually an all-out attack, to be honest, and when Van Aert came past me, obviously it was too slow for him, but no one else could follow him either, so I looked back for a second to see if Guillaume maybe wants to jump in his rear, but yeah, after the race I checked my data and it was only 20 watts less to my 1 minute record, so it was really an all-out attack. Guillaume told me don't sprint full gas, so yeah, I tried to push the speed that I can hold until the top, but yeah, Van Aert, he's just Van Aert. I mean, he's one of the best riders in the world at the moment, so yeah, I'm not very offended by it, but obviously it was too slow for him, I'm sorry. But yeah, it was just the idea, because everyone was getting really relaxed, and yeah, I've seen these moments already a couple of times, and you can take them by surprise, and Guillaume is ninth in GC, so I thought, yeah, for UAE, they won't chase him. We try to maybe catch some guys sleeping and try to initiate a move, but yeah, in the end, all of the whole top 10 was there, and riders could bridge across. I saw that Carapaz and Uran missed the move, but yeah, like I said, they closed the gap, and in the end, it all stayed the same, but we had nothing to lose, and it was only 10K to go. So yeah, Guillaume was, first he said, oh, I think it's stupid. But then 1 minute later, he came to me, actually, it's not a bad idea. Let's do it.
Good luck today. And hopefully you're up there again to support Guillaume.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Well, that was Simon Geschke. That was quite entertaining. Poor old Simon Geschke. And Wout van Aert, you were going to nominate somebody for Peddler de Charme, and it's somebody who's involved, or maybe not so involved anymore, in the King of the Mountains competition.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in many ways, we all like Michael Woods. We love the way he's been competing in this Tour de France, the way he raced. And so far, he has not managed to have a stage win, and apparently he will not manage to get the polka dot jersey. So I think... and also because he's a nice guy, he's in relationship with the press, in relationship with the other riders, in relationship with the crowds. I think it deserves a consolation prize, which is the Pedaleur de Charme mug.
You did speak to him briefly at the finish, didn't you, Mitch?
I did. I didn't record it, but he was spent. He's been up the road, you know, I think 4 times now, and he's been attacking every day up the road. So he's been going for those points, and he was just spent today. I think the energy going for the KOM jersey, physically and mentally, it's a big job, and you know, mentally the Tour de France is hard anyway. So he was just sort of exhausted today at the line, and but always Woodsy, you know, he turns around, comes back down, has a great old chat. You know, he's still got the energy. Like you said, that's a very good nomination, and you stole it.
I think he'd be a popular nomination, certainly. Speaking of coping with, you know, physical agony, you spoke to Simon Clark as well. I mean, he told you that he's been racing with a broken bone in his back.
I thought there was something not quite up with Clarky when we saw the start of the Andorra stage, or the stage after Andorra. To see Simon going out the back at any moment on his own is rare. You know, he's quite a crafty rider. So I thought, this doesn't look like him. And he explained that today, which he's been carrying, I think, for quite a long time in the Tour. And it was great to hear his thoughts on the race. He's always got a great cycling mind, great race mind. So it's good to sort of pick his brain before the start too.
Should we hear from somebody else you spoke to at the start, Dylan van Baarle, who is obviously on Ineos Grenadiers, another former teammate of yours?
I was actually not teammates with him. He left the team just before, but he's just one of those guys I admire because he's just a strong bastard. He's so strong and he just does those amazing things. He's converted himself into a climber after being a classics man. And I have a lot of respect for him. So I was happy to have a chat to him today. He's a quiet spoken guy. Tipped him to get in the break. I thought he was going to go up the road, but I think he's feeling the pinch now too. It was interesting to hear his thoughts on, you know, Luke Rowe not in the Tour anymore, which is quite a rare thing. Again, a Luke Rowe, a very tough man. I don't know if he's ever been defeated in a Grand Tour before. So I thought that was quite interesting because he acts, as Dylan said, acts as a bit of a director sportif on the road.
G'day, mate. How are you? Dylan van Baarle. Good to speak to you.
Yeah, thanks.
How you feeling, mate? Last week, coming into the big boy today, you going to go up the road?
Yeah, I'm struggling a bit after my crash last Friday. So yesterday I was struggling a bit with my ribs, so let's see how it is.
What's the plan for the team today? I don't expect you to tell us all the secrets, but, you know, to get some guys up the road, to play some support, to really put the pressure on today. It's, you know, we're getting down to the final crunch time now.
We try and go for the stage win, like try to have guys in the breakaway to go for the stage. And then, yeah, those four guys that are up in GC, they're so close to each other. So, yeah, they have to battle it out themselves, I guess.
Have you been enjoying the Dutch weather that's been put on this year at the Tour de France?
It's unbelievable. It feels more like Paris-Nice. It's unbelievable. Like, we have already had so much rain. That's also part of the job now.
And has it been strange not having Luke Rowe all the way through the Tour this year? He has a big presence on the race and your team, I can imagine.
Yeah, he's so important for the team. You know, he's like our sport director on the road. So yeah, of course we miss him. But yeah, we need to make a plan now with these 7 guys. But yeah, for sure we miss him.
Have you stepped into that kind of role or has anyone taken over that position?
No, it's always Luke and Kwiatkowski that mainly make the calls on the road. So and now it's more Kwiato and Castro Viejo that make the call. So I step a bit bit behind it.
Well, mate, good luck today. Big flat start set up for you to get in the breakaway. I'm tipping you.
I hope so. Let's see.
That was Dylan van Baarle. What are we expecting tomorrow? Another big Pyrenees stage. But after today, Pogacar's kind of scratched that itch. He's won a road stage and he's won a stage in the yellow jersey. First time he's done that, of course. Will he be satisfied with that, and will his team and he be content, do you think, to let a breakaway go up the road tomorrow?
I would think so. The way they've been racing up until today, that was very much their tactic and the way they played it. And it's, you know, in many ways very smart. Got other teams to do the work for them. So I wouldn't be surprised if they play that attack that card again tomorrow.
I mean, it seems obvious that you know, he's done as he did in the Alps. I mean, everybody's saying it's amazing that, you know, is not as impressive as he was in the Alps. So maybe also the level of the others, you know, went up a bit, because Jonas Vingegaard at first was not a contender in the Alps. So in the first place, so maybe he was kind of held back a little bit. And for a guy who's not as as fresh as they say, or as impressive as he was in the Alps, well, he won the stage today, increased his GC lead. What do you want? You know, what more do you want? So I guess he's got his stage win tomorrow. Normally, he should ride more conservatively, probably, which means either let the brake go or let the others do the job on the last climb tomorrow.
Toughest day of the tour. I'm talking with Luke Durbridge. How was it for you, mate? Was it the toughest day?
No, no way.
Really?
No. Vaughan 2, I reckon, was harder, just because of the heat. And it was not too bad from the start, to be honest. Like, Quickstep did a good job at the start blocking. And then randomly, some Israel Road and a few others, and so we weren't too far from the front of the race. So to make time cut wasn't too bad. I remember this stage back in 2018. We did it as a 65K stage, exactly the same one. So I'd done 120K before you arrived. So I knew what I was in for. But yeah, we just found our group and ready to finish. But
why was Quickstep blocking? Were they just blocking to protect, get a good group going, make sure Cav got in? What was the reason there?
I think two things, yeah. Group and also getting points. Matthews made a lot of points on him yesterday. You know, if it wasn't that big a group, then Cav could pick up some bonus points at the bottom. But in the end, Matthews going that good that he actually wrap them up anyway.
That was awesome. I saw that lead out.
Great. Luca did a really good job. He jumped them early. They weren't ready for it and actually just pinned him right at the bottom of Parasword. So it wasn't a very nice one. I was holding out in the wind there and I was just sort of, and then we hit the bottom of Parasword and I was like, we're all in a better limit. But Luca did a really good lead out and we picked up more points. So yeah, we'll just keep you right.
Nice, mate. Go and have a shower and a bowl of rice.
Thanks, mate. I'll speak to you.
What have you got for us tonight, Francois, in the way of culture?
Well,
we've already had the beer culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a quick one on the cheese.
And of course, it is the 14th of July. We're not forgetting that. So, it is the 14th of July. We're not forgetting that. So there's an obvious song to play out with.
Yeah, so the cheese of the day is called Petite Danse. It's a sheep milk, cheese. Produced in the village of Anse. It's only 5 km from Sanary, so very, very close from here. I don't know if it's on the menu here. We might have a look at it. It's a very small little cheese. Well, we are pretty tasty. And so if you're in the area again, if it's on the menu and we'll have a look at it, we'll tell you more about how we felt about it. Word of the day, well, is sapience.
Oh, nicely on brand there, Francois.
Yeah,
in
French, sapience, which is the same word pronounced differently. Why? Because, at kilometer 48 of the stage today, we went through Aurignac. And Aurignac is a little village with a famous cave. And this cave was so famous that, and the excavations carried out by a guy called Edouard Larté in this Aurignac cave led actually to the definition of a prehistoric culture known worldwide as the Aurignacians. So if you're into prehistory and into these guys who came before us, sapiens, Aurignacien is a period that's very famous, and it comes from the small village of Aurignac and the cave of Aurignac. So area for sapiens, which means what sapiens means in Latin, it means wise.
No, it's a device that you attach to your upper arm, Francois, and it measures your blood glucose levels.
Yeah, it means wise. So if you have a sapience attached to your arm, means you're probably a wise guy.
Yeah.
So the curious fact of the day, we finished in Saint-Lary-Soulan, and the interesting thing about Saint-Lary is that actually a dynasty there called the Mir family. And the Mir family is M-I-R, and they've been mayors of Saint-Lary-Soulan forever. The ski resort was created in 1945 by then mayor Vincent Mir, and I'm talking about this family because they're a very famous sports family. The daughter of Vincent Mir, so the guy who created the ski resort, was a skier, and she was, she was downhill silver medalist at the 1968 Olympics, so, top-level athlete. And she had two cousins, Jean-Pierre Mir and Jean-Henri Mir, who were both rugby union internationals. Jean-Henri won the Grand Slam, you know, in the Five Nations Championships in 1968. He won the Grand Slam with France. So, I mean, the same year, his cousin and this guy won an Olympic medal, and the other one won the Five Nations Championship with France with a Grand Slam. And this guy, Jean-Henri Mire, he became mayor of Saint-Henri in 1991. He passed the baton in 2020. He's no longer the mayor of Saint-Henri. But guess who is the mayor of Saint-Henri?
Ooh.
What's his name?
Oh,
Mire, of course. It's called André Mire, and it's the cousin of the guy. So, I mean, all these guys, I mean, this village is full of mirrors, you know, M-I-R-S. And at the end of this term, the current mayor will celebrate 80 years of Mire administration in the village, which is pretty strange. And well, there's lots of other things. The most famous hotel in the resort is called the Mire Hotel. And it's run by another cousin called Jean-Marie Mire. And to finish off with the Mire dynasty, a member of the French alpine skiing team is Jordi Mire, who is also a nephew of the current mayor. There you are. So if you go to Saint-Lary-Soulan, if you see MIR signs, well, you know what it means. You know, there's the whole family running the place. There you are. So we get to the song of the day, maybe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, before we do, just a couple of things. We had a couple of nominations on Twitter for Pedal de Charme already. Lachlan Morton is a bit of a left field suggestion, not actually riding the tour, but a very good suggestion. Tim de Klerk is another one, and Michael Morkov is another one. It's not always for. I think that the grace with which Tim de Klerk dealt with his crash and getting through that is worthy of a nomination, certainly. Certainly is. So, yeah, these are all good, strong nominations. Keep them coming. I think you're watching some. You were speaking about rugby there. You're watching some rugby tonight, are you not, Mitch?
Don't tell me the score, because the game was on actually at 10 o'clock this morning, Australian time. So it's 8 p.m. Australian time, so 10 o'clock our time.
I haven't been following it, I'm
afraid. It's the State of Origin. It's a dead rubber. You know, New South Wales versus Queensland, they've won two games, but I want to see them take the clean sweep. Go the Blues.
Well, ruthless. I shouldn't mention it, but I mean, France have been touring in Australia in rugby union, and we lost the first test at the last minute or so. Yeah, last second to you, Aussies, but we won the second test. So you know, there's a match there.
Excellent. Right. Well, listen. Are you gonna? Our starters have just arrived. Actually, here in this little restaurant, we're staying in a very remote part of the Pyrenees tonight, aren't we? It's quite a strange place where we're staying, but
yeah, we're staying pretty close to Lac de Payolle, where the tour went in 2016. And guess who won? Remember what?
Was it Steve Cummings?
You checked that? Well, we checked that.
I saw Steve Cummings tonight. Actually, Steve Cummings is a coach now at Team Ineos Grenadiers, and I saw him there at the finish, standing with Rod Ellingworth. So he's in his new job. We should wrap things up because we are being hurried along to have dinner. You're going to sing us out, though, Francois.
I was about to sing "Learning to Fly" by Tom Petty in honor of Clément Adair, a pioneer of aviation. He was born in Muret, and there's a museum to this guy. Muret was the start town today, and he has a museum there, but I suddenly remember it was Bastille Day. So, I mean, I sing it in a very low voice because I don't want
to draw too much attention
and to disturb the
maybe Mitch and I can hum along.
Allons enfants de la patrie, le jour de gloire est arrivé. Contre nous de la tyrannie, l'étendard sanglant est levé. L'étendard sanglant est levé. Entendez-nous dans nos campagnes mugir ces féroces soldats qui viennent jusque dans nos rois, égorger nos fils et nos campagnes. Aux armes, citoyens, formez vos bataillons. Marchons, marchons. Qu'un sang impur abreuve nos sillons. That was kind of a muttering in your ears there.
Encore, encore.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com. AI.com.
Any team that's tested AI tools for data has seen the pattern already. AI gives a different number than your BI tool. Metrics don't match across teams. And inevitably, users lose trust. It turns out, turning on AI is easy, but making it work on data is not. Hex AI was built to solve this. The key is nailing context. Hex is built to unify and curate your data context for agents. Data teams can observe, govern, and continuously improve every AI answer, so answers get smarter the more your team asks. The result? Your entire organization asks data questions in natural language and trusts the answers. Not because the AI got lucky, because it knows your business and its data. Because that's what an AI analytics platform should do. Join data teams from Cursor, Lovable, Ramp, AWS, and over 2,000 more at hex.ai.
Overtime, moss, mold, and mildew stains cover your home, and cleaning them is too much work. You need Wet and Forget, the easy bleach-free way to clean tough outdoor stains. For decks, patios, and cushions, use Wet and Forget outdoor spaces. No scrubbing, no rinsing. Just apply and let it do the work for you over time. Got a bigger job? Reach second-story siding and roofs with Outdoor Max. Up to a 30-foot reach and 2 times the coverage. Get Wet and Forget at Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart.